The Pharisees, like the rabbis that carried on their tradition, insisted that somehow providence could go hand in hand with human freedom, that we can be responsible for our actions while still caught up in a divine plan, that, as Rabbi Akiva enigmatically and interestingly expressed, all is foreseen, but free will is granted. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 51, Jonathan, the Idumeans, and the Sadducees. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. It is one of the many exquisite phrases in the Bible, one pronounced by Ruth to the widowed Naomi. Amechami ve'elokayach elokai, your people shall be my people, and your God my God. It is beautiful, poignant, and powerful precisely because it expresses a choice freely made. Ruth could so easily have turned back to her own Moabite family and her own Moabite land, and yet she chooses to make her place among the people of Israel. And what Ruth expresses is taken as the template for what Jewish conversion actually is. One takes on not only a faith, but also a family and a people, so that now one is covenantally bound to Jews in the present and to the biblical ancestors in the past. A convert becomes a son or daughter of Abraham and Sarah. This involves so great a metaphysical undertaking that it is understandable why conversion must be, as with Ruth, a decision freely taken. But once a Hasmonean leader forced conversion upon others, upon an entire people, and this deviation from Jewish tradition would have profound implications for his own family. When we left off, Shimon's son Yochanan, or John Hyrcanus, rules Judea. And, as we saw yesterday, he reaches a truce and ultimately an alliance with the Seleucid ruler Antiochus the Pious. But upon the death of Antiochus, Yochanan sees the opportunity to expand the reach of his kingdom in Judea and beyond. Josephus writes, "But when Hyrcanus heard of the death of Antiochus, he presently made an expedition against the cities of Syria, hoping to find them destitute of fighting men, and of such as were able to defend them. However, it was not till the sixth month that he took Medaba, and that not without the great distress of his army. After this he took Samega and the neighboring places, and besides these Shechem and Gerizim, and the nation of the Cuthians, who dwelt at the temple which resembled the temple which was at Jerusalem, which temple was now deserted 200 years after it was built." The reference here is to the Samaritans, later known as Cuthians or Cutim, the descendants of the people brought in by Assyria to replace the exiled 10 northern tribes. This people created a temple of its own. But then Josephus turns to another conquest of Yochanan Hyrcanus. The Idumeans, or Edomites, were descendants of Esau, Jacob's brother, and they lived in a land that, in the Bible, was explicitly given to them by God. It is clear from the ultimate rapprochement between Jacob and Esau in the Bible that the potential for peace exists between these two peoples, Israel and Edom, descendants of brothers. But it is also clear that this peace was not achieved. In perhaps the most famous biblical passage describing the destruction of Jerusalem, Psalm 137, we are told of the exile by Babylon in the first temple period, when suddenly, in a seemingly non sequitur, another people appears. Thus we are famously told in the Psalms, "By the rivers of Babylon there we sat down, yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hung our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, Sing us one of the songs of Zion. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. If I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy. Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom in the day of Jerusalem, who said, raise it, even to the foundation thereof." So we are told in the Psalms. What is Edom doing here? It seems that at the end of the first temple period, a state of enmity did exist between the descendants of Jacob and the descendants of Esau, and the Edomites joined in with Babylon in pillaging Jerusalem. The Idumeans, or Edomites, appear again in Jewish history during our period, when they are conquered by John Hyrcanus, Yochanan Hyrcanus. Thus Josephus further writes, "Hyrcanus also took Dora and Marissa, cities of Idumea, and subdued all the Idumeans, and permitted them to stay in that country if they would circumcise their genitals and make use of the laws of the Jews. And they were so desirous of living in the country of their forefathers that they submitted to the use of circumcision and of the rest of the Jewish ways of living, at which time therefore this befell them, that they were hereafter no other than Jews." End quote. We must note how contrary to tradition this is. Jonathan Hyrcanus's actions here in forcing conversion upon a people are shocking, and we will return to this point soon. John Hyrcanus reigns as both ruler and high priest for many years, when suddenly, in a choice that will set the stage for terrible battles yet to come, he switches sides in a religious debate consuming his polity. At this moment, there are several sects of Jews in Judea, each with its own version of Judaism. But in the capital city of Jerusalem, only two sects matter, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. The divisions between them are both theological and economic. The Pharisees interpret the Torah through the mimetic and intellectual traditions that rabbinic texts call the oral law, the Torah Shebaal Peh. The Pharisees are the forerunners of traditional rabbinic Judaism, giving us the law that is at the heart of traditional Judaism till this day. Sadducees, made up largely of the priestly elite, rejected the Pharisaic tradition. The Sadducees and the Pharisees differed further as to theology, with the Pharisees insisting on spiritual immortality and ultimate reward following death as a sacred doctrine of the Jewish faith. The Pharisees, like the rabbis that carried on their tradition, insisted that somehow providence could go hand in hand with human freedom, that we can be responsible for our actions while still caught up in a divine plan, that, as Rabbi Akiva enigmatically and interestingly expressed, all is foreseen but free will is granted, or as Saul Bellow pithily put it in a line quoted often by Rabbi Sacks, we have to believe in free will, we have no choice. Meanwhile, the Sadducees essentially denied human freedom. The historian Josephus was himself from the priestly class and did not love the Pharisees, but even he admitted that the love and loyalty of the Jewish population was for Pharisaic Judaism. He describes the division this way, quote, what I would now explain is this, that the Pharisees have delivered to the people a great many observances which are handed down by their fathers, which are not written in the law of Moses. From that reason, the Sadducees reject them and say that we are to consider obligatory only those observances which are in the written word, but are not to observe those that are derived from the tradition of our forefathers. Concerning these things, great disputes and differences have arisen among them. The Sadducees are able to persuade none but the rich and have no following among the populace, but the Pharisees have the masses on their side, end quote. Despite the preponderance of popular support for the Pharisees, John Hyrcanus, Yochanan Hyrcanus, Prince of Judea, once a supporter of Pharisaic spiritual leadership, decides to switch sides. In this, he is impacted by the fact that one Pharisee seems to have cast aspersions on his priestly lineage, providing an opportunity seized by a Sadducean advisor, who, Josephus tells us, quote, influenced him so that he joined the Sadducees' party, made him leave the party of the Pharisees, and abolished the decrees they had imposed on the people, and punished those who observed them. From this source arose that hatred which he and his son met with the multitude, end quote. Thus, a rift is created between the leader and the people, and it is precisely at this moment of great civil unrest that the Hasmoneans decide to make themselves monarchs. In 144 BCE, Yochanan Hyrcanus is succeeded by his eldest son, Aristobulus, who reigns for 1 year. He is the first of the Hasmoneans and the first Jewish ruler in the Second Temple period to call himself a king. The fact that a once humble family from Modi'in that had been dedicated to nothing but the defense of the Jewish faith suddenly adopts royal affectations tells us of the profound shifts of priorities in this family, first toward the elite and then toward royalty itself. As Professor Lawrence Schiffman wrote, originally, quote, the Maccabees fought only to free the Jews from foreign domination, not for power and wealth. They had risen initially against elements in the Jewish population who sought to Hellenize themselves and their countrymen. Their struggle was transformed into a war of independence against the Seleucid Empire only when it sought to aid the Hellenizers by persecuting Jews and Judaism. Yet gradually, the Hasmonean descendants of the Maccabees themselves acquired the trappings of Hellenism. They began to conduct their courts in Hellenistic fashion and were estranged from Jewish observance. This transition went way beyond the need of any monarch at that time to make use of Hellenistic coinage, diplomacy, and bureaucracy. The Hasmoneans employed foreign mercenaries to protect them from their own people, end quote. Thus, the once great enemies of Hellenism become Hellenists. The descendants of those that led the populist uprising against the Hellenist elite themselves become elitist, and the rift between king and people will prove disastrous. From this point forward, as the rabbis record, with the exception of certain moments, the Sadducees will maintain a strong control over the high priesthood, and many of the temple elite will be in tension with the rabbinic leadership, toward whom the loyalty of the masses will extend. But what is unknown to the people at this time is the ultimate irony that will only be revealed later. It was a purported aspersion cast on his heritage that led Yochanan Hyrcanus to leave the Pharisees and embrace the elitist Sadducees, and It was the forced conversion of the Idumeans by Yohanan Hyrcanus. That, as I argued, was utterly inconsistent with Jewish law and tradition. Consider then the following. A ruler that cared so much about his heritage would produce, as we will see, sons and grandsons that will kill each other, leading to a moment where not a single member of the Hasmonean house would be left alive. And as we will see, it will be a descendant of the Idumeans converted by Yohanan Hyrcanus, a monarch by the name of Herod, who will bring the ultimate destruction of the Hasmoneans about, a descendant of the very people that Yohanan Hyrcanus forcibly converted. It is this story that we will begin to tell next week. It is a sad story, but as with many stories in Jewish history, I can promise a small point of light as well. The Hasmoneans, after their first generation, cut themselves off from the Pharisees and from the people. It is striking then that out of nowhere, there will arise a ruler who will be beloved by the people, who will embrace Pharisaic rabbinic tradition, and whose legend and legacy would live on among Jews to this day. This will not be a princely descendant of the Maccabees, but someone else entirely. Over the next week, we will meet not only savage members of the Hasmonean house that will bring havoc, death, and destruction to their dynasty. We will also meet the greatest queen in the history of Judea, a woman about whose origins we do not know much, but who will join Ruth as unquestionably one of the greatest Jewish women that ever lived. This is Meir Soloveitchik, wishing you a Shabbat Shalom, looking forward to learning together next week, signing off.